Welcome to this Monday edition of Main Street here on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. We hope you had a wonderful North Dakota weekend. Coming up a bit later in today's show, we'll take you to The Tell, which is a monthly storytelling event in downtown Fargo where audience members share themed six-minute stories such as last August's East Meets West. Plus, filmmaker E-Jazz Khan joins us here on Main Street. He'll discuss his new movie, Trapped. It's a narrative film highlighting the realities of sex trafficking with a focus on the disproportionate risks faced by Indigenous women. A good part of the film was filmed in Linton, North Dakota, and the movie features local actors and aims to raise awareness about this tough-to-talk-about topic. And as we begin Main Street today, my guest is Republican Representative Jonathan Wary. He's a member of the North Dakota House of Representatives from the 22nd District. He hails from Castleton, holds a Bachelor's of Science degree in marketing from the University of North Dakota. Representative, you've brought Bill HB 1191, along with Senator Jerry Klein and Representative Glenn Bosch, that would establish an Office of Entrepreneurship. And I'd like to visit with you about that today. Representative, first, welcome to Main Street. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, Craig.
Let's start with why. What are the specific gaps or challenges in entrepreneurship that you feel this bill will address here in North Dakota?
Yeah, so I brought this bill forward because I got to meet somebody from Victor Huang, who is part of the Right to Start organization, which is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that helps address the problem of startups being at a 40-year low in the United States. And I suspect most people don't realize that. And I think it's because it's really tough to start a business. A lot of red tape, a lot of long hours, and a lot of wondering how to get the resources you need. So that's why I brought this bill forward.
Some people, I think, would say, wait, there's some irony here. You're saying that government can help with red tape and those types of issues, Representative?
Yeah. And so this is to create an Office of Entrepreneurship that will coordinate efforts from all the various agencies across the state, both state government and nonprofits, that encourage the growth of entrepreneurship. It helps an entrepreneur or a founder streamline the processes or in the workflow. Hey, you go here for this resource, you can go here for this, you can go here for this, so that coordination effort. And then also just strengthening the ecosystem so entrepreneurs can get quality services and resources quickly.
Where do you anticipate this bill is aimed to serve? Is it just the Fargo area or is it the entire state, Representative?
That's the very reason I put this bill in, is to create something at the state level that could coordinate the efforts or some of the best practices that this office would see going on, potentially in Fargo or Bismarck or Minot or Grand Forks, Dickinson, et cetera, but be a central point of coordination for those best practices so that it doesn't just, the resources aren't just in our big population centers. That if you're starting a business in Beulah or in Stanley, you still get access to some of that expertise for somebody that can coordinate that on your behalf.
How does your bill define what it means to be an entrepreneur to get this assistance?
In this bill, and this is legislation that has been passed in some other states, but it's to provide resources to businesses in the first 5 years of their existence. The reason businesses fail is usually death by a thousand cuts, meaning I wasn't aware I had to do this. I wasn't aware I needed this level of talent. I wasn't aware I needed to file this report. And so I think having someone come alongside business owners in their first 5 years of existence will help them with, other states have shown, it will help with business success rates. At North Dakota, we want to be the best place to operate and own a business. We strive to do that. And I think this is another part of the foundation of providing that capability.
There's a target of encouraging 5% of state contracts for businesses under 5 years. How is that determined and what does it mean? How will it be monitored?
So, you're speaking to a part of the bill that says a state shall make an effort to award 5% of its total contracts to businesses 5 years or under. And I do expect some pushback on that, which I will accept. But the goal is to point out, hey, if we can, how can we support newer businesses getting a fair shot at some of the business that happens in the state? Let's at least track it. Then we can come up with strategies for how to improve it. I work at a 50-year-old company. We've got an advantage over some of the newer ones. And so, but we were founded by a gentleman from Sheldon, North Dakota, an entrepreneur, and you know, he ran that thing on a shoestring for the first 5 years of existence. He could have used some of these resources and help, just like countless others of our other business founders could use.
There's a fiscal note of $485,000 with this bill. It's an appropriation. Is that sufficient, representative, to achieve the office's goals, do you think? And how did you come to that amount?
I think so. We actually have, there's a process to get a fiscal note assigned. What that is, that's a director and a coordinator. I don't think one of anything gives enough depth. So we'd have a director and a coordinator that would be set up in the Department of Commerce. And it is the salary and benefits for 2 years as assigned by Office of Management and Budget. So there is a science to that, and it's two roles, director and coordinator for this office.
There are business incubators around the state that I have seen, specifically in Grand Forks. How does this differ from existing entrepreneurship programs that already exist?
You know, I see this as supplementary to them. It's additive. It's not in place of. There's some great work being done, whether it be Center for Innovation, you know, the various chambers of commerce. You've already got the Department of Commerce. And working with the department, they used to have an Office of Entrepreneurship. And with the changing times, it fizzled out. But they also said, yeah, we should probably revisit that. And that's what this bill does, is it revisits that. I see this role as a linkage to all these other organizations that each take maybe a link of the chain. I could see this one strengthening that and connecting some of those resources for a business. Again, because they're going to stay connected to these founders for the first 5 years, they develop relationships with them. They'll learn more about their businesses and then hopefully connect them to these other resources throughout the state or even the country that can help them.
This bill has stakeholders, representative, such as business incubators. You've talked about that, chambers of commerce, financial institutions. What role have they played, if any, in supporting this initiative?
You know, they're mostly curious right now, which I really appreciate. I haven't had anybody with their arms crossed saying, hey, this is stupid, we don't need this. Most people are saying, tell me more. I also want to let you know which component we are, you know, what role we play, whether it be the SBA, Small Business Development Corporation, the Center for Innovation, Emerging Prairie, Department of Commerce. You know, think of, we're trying to create more interconnectedness between that. And if you're a founder or an entrepreneur, you started because you're trying to solve a problem. And now you're trying to commercialize that idea. It's really daunting to navigate all that. In fact, you run out of time trying to attend all the events or build those relationships. The thought here is you'd have a centralized spot that helps you coordinate that, and so that you can spend most of your energy running your business.
North Dakota is getting younger. Not only is this a geographically bill that helps people from around the state, but also maybe younger folks who are moving to the state have these entrepreneurial ideas. Is that also someone you've thought about as you brought this forward?
You know, that's a really good point. I hadn't thought of that specifically, but if we can continue to be a great place to own and operate a business, and then we add in, hey, bring your ideas here. I talked to a founder who moved to Fargo from Boston to set up his company because he had access to the Emerging Prairie startup ecosystem. The number one reason he moved here, that in our friendly business environment. And he's only got two employees today, but he will have more. Okay, I don't want just Fargo to be the only spot you'd move. I'm glad he did move there, but I think if we can get this going, we could say, hey, I want to move to Williston or Mott or Crosby, you know, and these different communities, and I can run my business from there, and I've got help with this entrepreneurial ecosystem. I'll have somebody assist me throughout that. So then I can navigate the red tape, know which maybe software tools I should be buying, know maybe what consultant resources are available to me as I grow my business. That would be the goal.
We're enjoying our conversation with Republican Representative Jonathan Worry. He's a member of the North Dakota House of Representatives from the 22nd District, and he's from Castleton. Representative, how do you know that this will work in the end? In other words, how are you going to evaluate? What benchmarks do you have in place to look at this thing and say, hey, we're doing well, or hey, we need to change things?
At a broad level, it's the state GDP, you know, gross. That's an economic indicator. Total employment. Those are the broad level, you know, high level ones. But then that's part of the reason I want to track how many businesses in the state are 5 years and under, so we get a baseline, and we can chart improvement from there. What I'm trying to get across is more success stories like, and it's not so much the, I'm not even thinking the Shields that started 100 years ago, or the Great Plains that started 45 years ago. I'm thinking of these successful startups that started inside the last 10 years. I'm on the Emerging Prairie Board, and I get to see these different companies that are coming to North Dakota because they want access to the startup ecosystem. I would like to make sure that that goes to all parts of our state. And I think having this type of office can create that interconnectedness. We got a lot of pockets of excellence helping businesses in the state today. My thought with this bill and this Office of Entrepreneurship is to create more interconnectedness between them.
The idea is to create this office within the Department of Commerce. Are there other state agencies that will be involved or consulted with to avoid duplication of efforts, Representative?
Well, we're going to have legislative oversight, so we will we'll continue to monitor it. But yeah, I would see Office of Management and Budget being involved. You'd see the Department of Labor potentially being involved, you know, the adjacent agencies, and of course the governor's, it's an executive position, you know, cabinet position. So the governor's office will have oversight on this too.
Representative, do we know if other states have done this well? And which other states might those be?
I did some research on this, and I worked with this organization called Right to Start, who, and they're, again, they're the nonprofit that helps foster offices of entrepreneurship, provide resources to them. So far, it is established in offices of entrepreneurship are established in Nevada, New Mexico, Louisiana, Missouri, and Kansas. The thought would be that potentially these state positions could work on best practices with other states to share what's working and what's not and to continue to improve from there. My hope is that North Dakota gets this established and that we work with, and I could see inside the Department of Commerce or wherever this ultimately goes, that they would also work with some of these other states around best practices.
Are there any risks or challenges that are out there that maybe I haven't thought about relative to implementing this bill, creating this office? And is there a way to address any of those concerns that you've already put into this legislation?
Yeah, there's risks. I think there's personnel risk if we don't hire the right people for the roles for the director and coordinator. I think there's a risk if other entities that are already doing a portion of this for business founders in the state don't want to play ball. And then third would be entrepreneurs don't utilize these resources for them. I think all of them can be mitigated though with hiring the right people. I do think the other entities, the chambers, the Centers for Innovation, SBDC, I think they would collaborate really well, the EDCs. And then lastly, I think if we do a good job with PR, that entrepreneurs would reach out for this. And I think we can leverage other partners to help funnel entrepreneurs to use these resources. So I think all the risks can be overcome.
Republican Representative Jonathan Worry has been my guest. He's visiting with us in between committee meetings. Representative, the biggest surprise that you have come across in this session so far is what?
That bills we thought we either killed or passed keep coming back in different forms. But I think that happens every session.
The magic of the legislature.
As we say, this one's an old friend. Yeah, this one's an old friend, and we get to see it again. So, yeah, that's probably the biggest thing, Craig.
Representative Jonathan Worry, he's brought Bill HB 1191, along with Senator Jerry Klein and Representative Glenn Bosch, that would establish an Office of Entrepreneurship within North Dakota's Department of Commerce to support entrepreneurship statewide, improve access to resources, and encourage state contracts for new businesses. It would appropriate $485,000 for staffing and operations for the 2025 through 2027 biennium. Representative, best wishes. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Greg.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. The Tell is a popular downtown Fargo-based storytelling event held monthly above Side Street Grill and Bar in a space called 4x4. There's literally a hat that brave audience volunteers place pieces of paper with their name on it, and those whose names are drawn get to tell their story, which is loosely centered around a theme. In the case of The Tell from last August, which was held at its former venue, Cellar 624 on Main Avenue, tellers were asked to keep their stories to 6 minutes max and relate it to East meets West. The first storyteller of the night, Kara Cody Brown, tied North Dakota and Bosnia together and told a tale of serendipity with an old friend. Kara, come up.
So, yeah, this story is called The Premonition because it's about a premonition I had one time. So when I graduated from MSUM back in 1990, moved to Brownsville, Texas, and I ended up working as a paralegal and interpreter in a legal office with people from Central America that were applying for asylum. And at that time, I ended up renting a room from this couple who had moved there from the East Coast to live a simple lifestyle. And they were into, they biked everywhere and walked everywhere and had a big garden. And they were like my parents' age and they were really nice to me. And they loved having people come together in their home. And they would have meals and just invite eclectic groups of people. And they didn't like small talk. They liked talking about like religion, politics, current events, stuff like that. So I stayed with them for a while, then got my own place, eventually moved back up here. And over the next 20 years, I just kept in touch with them via like once a year, send a Christmas card. So that was in 90. In 2010, I was living on a farm north of Winemere where my husband grew up. And it was a July day, and it was really just this beautiful day. And I was home alone with my daughter, and it was the only day she had ever had this one girl come over to play. It was the only time they came together. And this girl's name was Serenity, and it seemed significant because that word just encapsulated the feeling that day. So as they were playing, I walked down to get the mail, and I was just taking in the serenity. It was like there was no wind, there were no tractors, there were no loud machinery, nobody around. It was just like the perfect temperature. It was just beautiful. And all of a sudden I had this vision, and it was just really realistic, and it was of Jean and Ruth, the couple back in Brownsville, and I saw them riding their bikes down Highway 18 by our farm. And it was so real that when I got to the mailbox, I looked up and down the highway to see if they were really coming. But there was nobody. There was no traffic, nothing. So I went back up to the house, made some lunch for the girls. And then I sat down to read the newspaper. And the girls went back outside to play. And all of a sudden, I heard this loud voice. Hello! And I looked out my front window, and it was Jean on his bicycle. At this point, Gene is 70 years old. He still lives in Brownsville, as far as I know. And I just couldn't believe it. So I ran out and I said, where's Ruth? Because that was part of my vision. He said, no, she didn't come. She's in Maine visiting her kids. I said, how did you get here? What is happening? And he said, oh, I took a train to Fargo. And then I went and rented a bike. And I rented it. It's from that bike shop by the railroad, and I told the guy I was going to visit you, and that guy happens to be an acquaintance of mine, so he's like, hey, I know her, which was weird. So then he got the bike, and he's a guy who didn't like technology and stuff, so he has no phone. He knows my address, but he doesn't know where it is in relation to Fargo. He likes to get around by asking people, so he just starts pedaling. He goes out to the tourism center in Fargo. And he says, I'm going to go visit my friend Kara. She lives in north of, or around Winemere. She has a farm in Winemere. Well, I didn't know this woman working there, but she knew me. It turns out she's from Winemere. And she knows my husband's family. She says, oh, I can tell you exactly where her farm is. So she sends him on his way. And then he stopped one more time on the way from the tourism center to our farm, stopped and asked, and that person also knew how far away he was, so kept ushering him on. So I just couldn't believe this story. So I'm like, well, are you going to stay for dinner? Are you staying overnight? You know, we have an extra room. No. He says, I got to get back to Fargo, because you know, it took him like 4 hours to get there. And now it's late afternoon after we visited, and he's going to head back. So I'm kind of worried about him. Like, are you sure? He says, yeah, I'm going to hitch a ride. I'm like, it's not the 1970s. I don't think anybody's going to pick you up. But he's just totally confident. So I was worried. He didn't have a phone, so I wouldn't have a way to check with him if he got back. But I knew I was going to Fargo in a couple days. So I said, let's meet up for lunch. And I said, I picked a Bosnian restaurant. I thought he'd like it. And so we decided to meet there 2 days. So I'm just worrying about him. I show up there in 2 days, and there he is. I'm like, how'd it go? Did you get a ride? I did, he said. The guy who drives the mail truck from Fargo to Wymyr, he picked me up. And I'm like, really? And he goes, yeah. And guess what? He's from Bosnia. So he goes, I invited him here today. So I'm like, great. So I got to meet that guy, and we all came together for lunch. And we were eating lamb. And so Gene, he likes to talk to everybody. So he's talking to the owner of the Bosnian restaurant and saying how great this lamb is. So then I'm telling him, yeah, actually, we're going to start raising lamb. And he's, oh, well, keep in touch. He ended up buying lamb from us. So, like, everything just kept coming together. Oh, and so my takeaway from this story is that, I don't know, everything's connected, I think, and it all comes together.
That was Kara Cody Brown from The Tell at their then location, Cellar 624 on Main Avenue in Fargo. She told a story called The Premonition. The recording came to us courtesy of David and Tracy Huebner. The Tell is a monthly Fargo-Moorhead storytelling event. You can find more information on The Tell Facebook page or Instagram.
This is BirdNote. Christian Cooper is host of the National Geographic show Extraordinary Birder and author of the memoir Better Living Through Birding. But as a kid, Christian says he wasn't interested in birds until his parents made him take a woodshop class.
I had to build something, so I built a bird feeder and I put it up in the backyard.
Christian filled the feeder with cracked corn. And then
this bird shows up, all black except for this patch of red at the wings.
At first, Christian thought he discovered a new species of crow.
And I was thrilled with my preteen scientific prowess. And then I found out it was a red-winged blackbird. Oops. But still, to this day, one of my favorite birds. And they are the first sign of spring for me. Because growing up on Long Island, they would all depart en masse. And I would get mildly depressed in the course of the winter. And then I would hear sometime in like March, okay. And I'd be like, they're back. They're back. Thank God they're back. Spring is here.
Before we know it, spring will be with us again. For Bird Note, I'm Jonice Franklin.
Coming after the break, a film with a hard story to tell premieres in Bismarck and Fargo. A good part of the movie was filmed here in North Dakota, and it's called Trapped. Stay with us.
Thank you.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. Sex trafficking, it's a severe and heartbreaking issue that impacts individuals of all genders, ages, and backgrounds. However, Indigenous women face a disproportionate risk of being impacted and affected compared to other groups. Joining us to discuss this critical topic is filmmaker Ejaz Khan, who has now completed the movie Trapped, sheds light on the realities of sex trafficking in a small North Dakota town. A lot of the movie was filmed on location in Linton, North Dakota. Ejaz, welcome back to Main Street.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
You're sure welcome, and I'm glad that you are speaking with us. I want to tell our listeners that this movie will open to the public January 31st through February 13th at the Grand Theater in Bismarck, and in Fargo from January 31st through February 6th at Marcus Westacres Theater. How would you describe this? Is this a fictional narrative? Is it a true story?
It's not fictional. In my case, I did not put this together with stories that were coming in my mind. I didn't create the stories. I interviewed over 100 girls who had been abused and sex trafficked, and from that I came up with a story. So it is a true story. It's a true story about several girls in the United States.
This movie, you've told me, has been difficult to distribute. People don't want to hear about it. Is that what you have found?
I find that to be very true, very disappointing, but very true. It has been an absolute nightmare to distribute this film. More so the distribution, more than that, what it is that when I speak to people, they don't want to speak about it. The two things happen to them. One is they don't want to speak about it because it's a hush-hush topic, and they don't want to bring it up. And the other thing they keep saying to themselves is that, you know, it doesn't happen in my town, but they don't know. And for that purpose, they just want to ignore it. It's like, you know, there's a problem happening in our society, but they want to look the other way because it's not happening in their home, so to speak.
How did you go about, Ejaz, choosing the stories that you ultimately chose to tell in this movie?
You know, to be just to the stories of the girls that I interviewed, that was one of my biggest challenges, because I spoke with them, and it's their story. It's their life. It's not just a story for them. And me, I was trying to represent them, and my job became to represent them in the right way, in a way where I'm true to them. I didn't want to add the Hollywood glamour to it. I didn't want to add to the extra suspense and so on and so forth. Simply because it's a true story. I mean, it may not be one girl's story, which in many words, many ways it is. It's one girl and 100 girls. You know, all of them almost have the same story. So that was one of the biggest challenges, writing the script and being true to them and making sure that I keep the respect about, I mean, they trust me with their life story. It's not public to everybody. I just wanted to make sure that I bring that across, and I bring it across in the authentic way.
How difficult was it for you to capture the story? It's one thing for someone to tell you the story, but then your job as a filmmaker is to capture the story, to bring it to us.
It was very hard. I mean, I should start with saying that I am a parent myself, and there are scenes in our film Trapped where I personally, I directed the film. I was also sitting by my editor's side every moment while we were editing. And these are such challenging scenes, not just as a director or a writer, but also as a parent. It's very, very difficult to know that our youth here in America are going through such trauma, and sometimes they don't have anyone to speak with. So that to me was one of the biggest challenges, to bring forward the authenticity of their stories. And as a father, I hated watching it. I hated editing it and the color corrections and so on and so forth. When I say I hated it, just to know that it's happening here is very disturbing. But at the same time, it makes me open my eye and says, hey, you know, I am a parent. Why didn't I know about this? Because I didn't know about this topic
I didn't know about it at all. And that is the disappointing part about finding out something like this and feeling that, okay, I know about it, so everybody else should know about it. But people don't know about it because I was ignorant in the past, and people are ignorant. They choose not to. The challenge was the reality. The challenge was that it's happening here, and how do I tell everybody, hey, guys, wake up. It's a wake-up call.
Ejaz, how did you go about discovering these stories? Because so often, these are stories that people do not want to tell.
It took me about a year and a half, to discover this. I mean, there was no ad that I could run. Nobody was going to come forward. So I had to go chasing the victims, so to speak, and trying to get in touch with them. I mean, every 100 of them I spoke with, I got one yes. So that was a challenge to begin with. And there were some stories that just stumbled upon, you know, speaking with someone and someone turns it on and said, hey, you know what, Ejaz, it happened to me. There's a friend who opened up after she found out that I was doing this, and she opened up and she said, this cause is so dear to me. It happened to me and no one knows about it. I didn't tell anybody about it. It was very challenging.
Can you give us a little more depth? And I want to be very respectful of our listeners, but I want them also to feel the subject that you are talking about. Can you share with us maybe one of the stories from the film Trapped that you have shed light on?
It's the relationship between parents and children. How we take our children for granted, and we just, you know, life goes on and they're going to school and they're looking at their games in front of the computers, they're getting on the phone and they're talking, but we don't monitor any of that, and we don't think that something wrong is happening. And I believe that is what Trapped brings forward, is the jarring information that parents should know that your children are in danger. I mean, you know, in one of my interviews with another FBI agent, actually, he said to me that there was a young boy of 15 years old who got involved somehow and was being blackmailed, and he killed himself. So those are the issues that we are bringing forward with Trapped.
My guest today is Ejaz Khan. He has produced, directed, and now completed the film Trapped. The film will be open to the public in Bismarck at the Grand Theater from January 31st through February 13th. And in Fargo at the Marcus West Theaters from January 31st through February 6th. It's a film that discusses the tough topic of sex trafficking and is set in a small town in North Dakota. In fact, a lot of the movie was filmed on location in Linton, North Dakota. Ejaz, what do you hope audiences who take the time to watch this difficult film take away from your film?
Takeaway is the acknowledgement that this happens over here. It happens in America. It happens in our society. So that is the first thing I would love them to take away. Because once they do that, then they're going to start thinking and helping people who do get involved in this. I mean, one of the reasons it's such a hush-hush topic here is because nobody wants to speak about it. You don't understand how many people, girls, I have come across who don't want to talk about this, though it happened to them. They don't want to talk about it because nobody wants to listen. It's such a hush-hush topic. So that is one main thing I would like people to take away, is don't make it hush-hush. Talk about it. I mean, at the end of the day, the victims didn't do anything wrong. They are victims for a reason. And what happens is, since we keep it hush-hush, the predators do more of it because they know no one's going to speak about it. So, yeah, I mean, that's one thing I think that we should take away from Trapped. The other thing that I believe that we should take away is to have have dinner with your children, you know, spend time with your children, you know, ask them how the day goes. Don't just think that they went to school, they came back, they're on their phones and they're on their computers and everything is fine. The children don't speak. They hide it. And they don't do that because they don't want to. They do that because they're just trying to protect their own parents. They don't want to share anything bad that's happening with them because they think that they're going to cause more stress. So we should allow our children to have an open conversation with us. Good, bad, ugly, whatever it is, we should give them that confidence.
Ejaz, can you give me a guide on who should come and watch this? And what I'm thinking about is, do you hope that parents come without their teenage kids, with their teenage kids? Is there an age where it may be inappropriate for parents to have their kids with them at this movie? What are you hoping relative to your audience here?
You know, legally it's a PG 13, but I was encouraging a friend of mine to bring her 11-year-old son. I was encouraging a friend of mine to bring a 9-year-old daughter of hers. The reason why is because I think the sooner we educate our young, the better it's going to be. So I personally think that parents should come with the children. What it's going to do is it's going to just open up. It's going to be like an icebreaker. It's going to be something they're going to go home and they will speak about it with their children. And, you know, they'll warn them or they'll speak to them and they'll say to them, you know, you can come to us. They may just add some restrictions to their phones because that's something that happens in our film as well. And it happens in real life. Predators come through the phones. These days, you know, the phone is attached to our hip. So, I would love parents to come with the children.
Ejaz, I want you to comment on the fact that this is a film significantly about Indigenous women. However, as I noted in my open, this is not just a problem that impacts Indigenous teens. What more can you offer?
I think it impacts everybody. I think it impacts Americans. I think it impacts Indians. I think it impacts Chinese. I think it's all over the place. And the more I find out about this and the more I speak to people about it and the more I speak to authorities about this and girls who have been through this, the more I feel that it's happening in every single society. The problem is nobody wants to talk about it. Just like nobody wants to come watch my film Trapped. It's the same exact reason. Nobody wants to know that this is happening in the backyard or it's happening in their home. Nobody wants to know. I did meet a girl and that girl turned on and said to me, I mentioned that this is what was happening to me by my father and my mom told me, please don't speak about it to anybody. Now you tell me, a 13-year-old girl, the dad is abusing her sexually. She goes to her mom and her mom says, oh, you know, you can't speak about this. Where does this girl go? Where does this 13-year-old girl go when the two people who are supposed to protect her are gone?
Ejaz, how will you know whether your film is successful? And I almost want to put that in air quotes because I have a feeling it's not just about money, right? Or the number of people who see it. How will you know that you've done what you wanted to do?
You know, I believe that I want to make sure that one person, one girl, one boy does not run away from their home. And I don't know if I'll ever know that. I wish somebody calls me and says, hey, Ejaz, you know, I watched your film and it changed my mind and I am going to stay home and I'm going to speak to the right people and I'm not going to run away from home. And that, to me, would be an absolute success. I mean, that is just not my goal. It's the goal of my cast, my crew, everyone who has been and touched our film Trapped has the same exact goal. And our goal is that raise awareness so people don't run away, kids don't run away from home and do the wrong thing.
Ejaz, if there is somebody who is listening who might be thinking that was me, but he's right, I can't go to my mom, I can't go to my dad, what would you tell them after visiting with hundreds of people that were in the same shoes?
You know, our local police authority, we have to put trust in them. Our teachers in school, we have to put trust in them. Our church, we have to put trust in them, right? Go. These are places where you can go and trust them. If you cannot trust your parents because your parents are not there for you, then go to these authorities. I mean, go to church. Speak to the priest. You know, speak to your teachers. Speak to your principal. Speak to the cops. I mean, they are here to help, and they will help. This is not a topic that is ignored by any of them. They will not ignore it. So, you know, do you have an aunt? Speak to your aunt. Do you have an uncle? Speak to your uncle. But it has to be spoken to other people other than just your parents, if your parents are not there for you.
Ejaz, what's next for you?
I'm writing a film about mental illness. So in my studio, the thought is, let's make films that matter. This film is also something that really, really matters because I feel no one wants to touch this because, yes, it's not a very profitable thing. You know, it's not. It's not something that Hollywood wants to do. And if they do, they make it all bells and whistles and so on and so forth. I feel I want to do this. I want to bring light to topics that we run away from. You know, one of the reasons why I want to do this is because I have been saying this all throughout, because where I come from, we have this thing where, you know, once you die, you're going to go to heaven. For us, heaven is America. You come to heaven, everything has to be good, right? And when I come here, I see that everything is not 100%, let alone, you know, these things are happening. It just is so disturbing.
My guest has been filmmaker Ejaz Khan. He's completed the movie Trapped. It's a film that sheds light on the realities of sex trafficking in a small North Dakota town. And the movie was filmed, much of the film was filmed on location in Linton, North Dakota. The movie is set to open to the public January 31st through February 13th at the Grand Theater in Bismarck and January 31st through February 6th at the Marcus West Acres Cinemas here in Fargo. Ejaz, thank you for doing this film.
I really appreciate you having, you know, the mindset of, okay, I'm going to help Ejaz and I'm going to help this topic to increase awareness. I really appreciate it and thank you for having me.
Dakota Medical Foundation is reminding listeners of Giving Hearts Day, a 24-hour event supporting charities in North Dakota and Northwest Minnesota, Thursday, February 13th. Since 2008, Giving Hearts Day has connected donors with charities to help fund their missions and raise over $195 million. Learn more at givingheartsday.org.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. Have you been feeding the birds this winter? Placing a few bird feeders with a variety of food options can make for excellent bird watching on those chilly winter days while also helping birds. Here's Chuck Lura with his Natural North Dakota.
Have you been feeding the birds this winter? Setting out a few bird feeders with a variety of food items can provide some good bird watching during those cold winter days. And it helps the birds, of course. Do not be surprised if a few visitors from the north show up for a meal occasionally. Many of these avian visitors are finches and related species from the boreal forests of Canada that are forced to wander southward in search of food when the fruit and seed crops are in short supply up north. Now in its 26th year, the Finch Research Network, a group of ornithologists and avid birders, assess the food crops of various species of finches across Canada and use that information to predict their movements for the upcoming winter. Although the forecast is largely for Ontario eastward, there are observers in Manitoba and westward. Because North Dakota borders the Canadian provinces of Manitoba and Saskatchewan, avian winter visitors to the state may include pine siskins, red poles, purple finches, red-breasted nuthatches, crossbills, pine grosbeaks, and evening grosbeaks. Due to good seed and fruit crops up north, many of these species will likely stay put this winter. But there are a few notable exceptions. And who knows, winter storms, long cold spells, or other factors could be just enough to push the birds southward, particularly if the winter food supply gets in short supply. There's a good chance for seeing some pine siskins and purple finches at the bird feeders this year. There's also a chance for a few red-breasted nuthatches to show up. But the red poles, crossbills, and Bohemian waxwings are expected to stay up north. If you're interested in seeing some pine grosbeaks, you could be in luck. Their movements are tied closely to mountain ash fruits and others, which were mixed last summer. The forecast notes that there might be some movement this winter. Watching some evening grosbeaks is always fun, and this could be a winter to see them. Birds from northwestern Ontario and westward are expected to be moving south in search of food this winter. You can entice them to your place by having a platform feeder well stocked with sunflower seeds. I've put a link to the winter finch forecast along with the text of this Natural North Dakota. It's housed on the Finch Research Network's website, which also contains information on membership, donating, or subscribing to their email list. You can access them at prairiepublic.org. I'm Chuck Lara.
Natural North Dakota is supported in part by the NDSU Central Grasslands Research Extension Center. You can get Natural North Dakota essays delivered to your inbox every week. Sign up for the email newsletter at prairiepublic.org.
This is Dakota Datebook for January 27th. On this date, in 1904, a Fargo newspaper published a sympathetic story about a young woman arrested at a bawdy house in Wahpeton. She went by the professional name Leo Williams and was described as a woman of unusual beauty. Charges of grand larceny had been brought by Cora Oman, the notorious madam who ran a house in Moorhead. Leo offered no resistance when arrested, but she stated she was innocent and that the entire case was motivated by spite. Leo quickly hired an attorney who listened to her side of the story. She explained that she'd been living at the Oman house for some time and had tried several times to leave and retire from her life as a courtesan. However, Cora Oman had interfered. When another girl at the house announced she was going to Wahpeton, Leo decided to escape under the pretense of accompanying her to the train depot. Leo claimed that earlier in the day, she had temporarily exchanged diamond earrings with Cora Oman and had forgotten to return them before slipping away. In court the following morning, several local jewelers examined both sets of earrings and determined that Leo's pair was far more valuable than Cora's. The court was satisfied with Leo's story that she was, in fact, what was known in sporting circles as a good parlor girl and that her landlady didn't want to lose her. It was reported that Leo was the daughter of wealthy and influential parents from one of the leading families in her Wisconsin hometown. She was about to inherit an estate worth $100,000 in a few weeks. Leo expressed that the life she'd been leaving was distasteful to her. She intended to abandon it. She announced plans to take the night train to Wahpeton to pack up her belongings and then leave for the East. Cora Oman had long been a thorn in the side of Fargo and Moorhead officials due to her illegal blind pig and roadhouse operations. In 1901, she was extradited from Minneapolis on contempt of court charges after fleeing to avoid violating prohibition laws in Fargo. Though she was released on a writ of habeas corpus, she was immediately rearrested for the original charges. The St. Paul Globe reported that while many disapproved of her occupation, local veterans sympathized with Mrs. Oman for supporting her husband, an aged and disabled soldier. Today's Dakota Datebook, written by Lise Erdrich. I'm Ann Alquist.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
We'd like to thank the North Dakota Council on the Arts for supporting arts programming here on Prairie Public.
And that's a wrap for this Monday edition of Main Street. We are deeply grateful that you spent time with us today. Tomorrow on this show, we'll meet Dr. Cindy Lindquist, who's just been named the Director of Tribal Initiatives and Collaboration for the University of North Dakota. And we look forward to being with you again tomorrow, right here on Main Street.